Welcome back to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. And behind the camera, well, you can't see in the camera. But anyway, behind the scenes, behind the curtain, is Ethan Huffnagel, our executive international producer extraordinaire. If you enjoy this podcast, please keep listening, but also leave a comment wherever you can, share it with whomever you can, leave a 5-star review, not a 4 or less, and if you really want to support us, check out Patreon, where we have bonus topics. You can interact with us live and see kind of the behind the scenes and the way behind the curtain in between segments.
Of us preparing for segments that right. We're about to do. That definitely didn't just happen.
Shh, no, there's exclusive content.
Pay no attention to the men behind the curtain.
Right, right. And you can get there, patreon.com/switchcast. Special announcement, speaking of watching live, we are going to do our annual Switchcast live Christmas party episode with the all-star Switchcast cast.
Love it.
People like Tim from Tim's Enthusiast Garage, Myron Vernis, our technical advisor Dan Doucette, an OG John Sabo, and more will be on hand to lend their expertise and humor. And we're just going to have a great time interacting with you, sipping on some nog, and just enjoying the night, talking all things cars and related to cars.
I like our Christmas tradition. This will be the second year we've done it. So 2 means it's a tradition then, right?
Tyler's already getting ready. He's got his cable knit sweater on over here.
We love a man sweater.
Yes. So we know it's warming, Tyler, but what is warming our bellies? What is fueling this podcast, Tyler?
Well, Doug, it is a snowstorm outside and it is Christmas time. So I'm drinking a Midwinter Night's Dram from High West Distillery. That was a nice, weak cork pop, but this is a few years old. I'd buy one of these bottles every year, and I drink it only during a snowstorm or the Christmas season, and it might be overpriced, but I like the vibes.
I'm now trying the Elmer T. Lee that you tried last podcast. I do like me a little bit of Elmer T. Lee.
And boy, this tastes kind of weird now. It's been sitting there for a while. It's been oxidized.
All right, so getting warmed up. There was a midnight blue 996 GT3 that just got listed on Bring a Trailer. And Tyler, you were looking for a long time, and that was kind of your unicorn color, one of them. This one has full leather and ceramic brakes, but it's got some track time. But you bought a white one already. Do you feel like you jumped the gun too early and, you know, didn't wait for your ultimate unicorn?
So, Doug, I got to be honest. This is one of, other than the green ones, probably looking at the spec sheet, one of the best North American 996 GT3s from a spec perspective. Mm-hmm. Color match center console, color match seat backs, some Aluma look that I think is pretty tasteful in period. The aluminum gauges, the full leather, the whole, the cat's pajamas. This is the embossed like Porsche crest in the headrest. Good time. This car specifically was one of the ones that I was thinking of hunting down based on the spec. And I gotta say, after seeing it and thinking about it, I have no regrets. Is it a little rough?
It's a little rough. It's the ceramic rotors look just a wee bit more toasted than John Daly by the 18th hole. And
it went off and hit a tire wall and had to have the front bumper replaced. And it's obvious based on the leather on some stuff. Like, it has just been used. All the GT3 enthusiasts, quote unquote, in the comments on these are like, I love to see one that's been used as intended.
But then they don't bid on it.
They don't bid on it, and it's rough, and it's, I feel very good about the lovely white car that I have purchased, but I will be fascinated to see if this goes for more than I paid for the white car. My guess is it will, purely because it's blue.
I don't know. People see condition, and it's got a lot of track use, associated wear, previous off-track damage.
Yeah,
I don't know. But speaking of your GT3, you got a gift from Stephen Long, a listener of the podcast.
Thank you, Stephen. Don't even know what it is yet.
And it is color matched, white stitched Porsche keychains.
Oh, well, thank you. My goodness.
Yes, there you go.
Oh, look at me.
Now you have to use them, even if you have better ones.
Nah, I use it. I don't normally have keychains, so these will be quite wonderful to put on.
Do you have 2 keys?
I do.
Oh,
One of them doesn't have the computer chip in it, but it starts the car and it unlocks the doors.
Of course.
Well, thank you.
Ah, yes. We were speaking about importing cars last episode, and I'm importing one from Canada for a client, and I was amazed. It's been a while since I've done it, but really nothing's changed other than the tariffs. So I still know my way around it. Well, it's been a while since I've done this in Canada anyway, but it's amazing how few customs brokers know their way around the rules. I'm not going to name names because some of them are people I work with and they're great, but it was just, I contacted three different customs brokers. Well, this is four actually in five that all gave me conflicting and often flat out wrong information. It wasn't all to do with tariffs. So one, a car from Europe, I was quoted 25% tariff by one broker and 15% by the other one. Both of them specialize in overseas European imports. And I'm like, okay, it's one thing for AI to get something wrong, but this is what you do. This is what you should know. But in researching this car coming in from Canada, I was told three different things all wrong by three different brokers. One, it has to be held in their yard for 30 days. So they do the import. But it has to go to Boston, sit in their yard for 30 days. I was like,
that seems bizarre.
What? There's no bond on it. Like, it doesn't, it's an old car. So anyway, that was a big no. The next one told me that classic cars are exempt from the 15% reciprocal tariffs, and I only have to pay 2.5%. And they were referencing the Section 232 exemption because the car is aluminum and steel, so it falls under the aluminum and steel tariff rules, whatever, which I've literally read an article that clarified where people had tried to do that before, and they got charged back by customs, and customs clarified, no, that doesn't work. So I told her, no, I think you need to charge me 15%. And I referenced this article. She goes, well, did that come from an article or from the executive order? I was like, well, it's an article from somebody who does this, and they're referencing like cases of people getting charged back. And they're like, oh, I don't know about that. I mean, we've been doing it this way forever. And, you know, we've only been charging people 2.5%. So, man, I'm going to have a lot of unhappy customers if that's not right. I was like, well,
yikes.
You're going to have a lot of unhappy customers because the feds are charging people back when they don't pay what they're supposed to pay. Yeah. And then the third one, for a car over 25 years old, they said, I need to provide a photo of the VIN sticker showing that the car conforms to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards.
How does the VIN sticker tell you that?
Well, it says it right on it. It says this vehicle conforms to US EPA, gotcha. DOT, blah, 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 and HTSA crap. So I was like, no, it's, and I told them it's a 1993. And no, so I had to clarify. And, but it's all these customs companies, I'm having to tell them what to do. And I'm like, it's like when we closed on our house, I had to fix the closing statement that was prepared by a title company. That is what they do. Is
seriously?
They prepare, yes, seriously. It was like $8,000 off. There was this random $2,500 credit on there for nothing that I should have just left on there and been like, okay. But it was wrong. And they had all this different stuff on there. And I'm like, that doesn't apply. That doesn't apply. This amount is wrong. I was like, yeah, I can't trust professionals to be professionals. Okay, cool car coming out. Not worthy of a full segment, but it's interesting. Via the drive, the Magma GT mid-engine supercar could be the future of Genesis. Now, this thing has Hyundai roots. We're getting a little bit far removed. It's the luxury brand of the luxury brand of Hyundai. But this thing's kind of cool.
It does look pretty darn good.
And it's supposed to be just a mid-mounted V8. It's not a hybrid. It's just a car. And it's probably going to be fairly reasonably priced. It looks good.
Holy. The Jalopnik has an article entitled, Genesis wants to go GT3 racing with this thing. That would be sick.
Right?
Whoa.
Right? So I feel like this is the modern day Audi R8. It is a mid-level luxury brand kind of upbranding with an entry that hits above its pay grade. What's the phrase? I don't know.
Punches above its weight.
Yes. Thank you. I was trying to make a baseball analogy with hits, but then I lost it. Sports ball.
Man, this looks, and I like that it's not over, it doesn't feel overstyled. It is smooth and curvaceous, and I kind of dig that you can still tell it's a Hyundai with the way the headlights are done. Like, that's kind of, it fits in the brand's design language.
A Genesis. Oh, you can tell it's still a Genesis. Come on.
Sorry. My B.
But it is hot. It gets going so fast. It's like an Exodus.
Ha. Oh.
But have you seen the numbers yet?
No. What are the numbers, Doug?
I don't know. We'll leave it up to the judges. These are all Old Testament references, Tyler.
I am too smitten by this car to pay attention to your...
I'm too atheist for that.
Agnostic, Doug, agnostic.
Did you hear about the dyslexic agnostic insomniac?
No.
He stayed up all night wondering if there was a dog.
That's good. Okay, I like that one.
You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Are stick swaps worth it?
Yes. End of segment.
Well, yes. Okay. But everybody only talks about money and ROI in the car world today, which is everything that's wrong with the car world. Separate tangent that we're not going to go down right now. But it's a worthy conversation because we do get asked that often. I get asked it often anyway. And people go, oh, well, should I stick swap it? Or, you know, should I buy a stick swapped car versus a factory manual? Whatever.
What's your response to that question?
It depends.
Okay.
It depends. It depends on the car. But backing up to your first question, yes, it's worth it. If you want a car in a stick that they don't make in a stick, 100% it's worth it. Cost doesn't matter. If you want a car like E46 M3, well, they do make that in a stick. But bad example. Early 2000s, late 90s, sequential manual crap is better in a manual. There will be people that say manuals aren't always better, but I think from like 1995 to 2005, manuals were always better. There's just full stop.
Well, I'm going to flirt with the price thing here a little bit. If there is a significant delta between an automatic and a factory manual, most of the time it would be cheaper to buy and easier to find a good spec, good condition automatic that you can then pay a company to put a stick in.
Correct.
I think E46
there.
Yes. But E46s are a good platform for that, aren't they? It's relatively cheap. You can make sure you get five grand
to do a swap.
Yes. I would not do it on a 911. They've made so many manual 911s. I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, no, that's pointless. It's good luck. You find a Tiptronic car.
Yeah, like right? It just doesn't make any sense. So there are, but whatever, but yes.
One area where I think it's especially worth it, and we'll get there. I love that people are doing it to like CLK 63 Black Series and really, really amazing cars that weren't available with a manual. So you can't put a price on that. But also, if you find a car that's in the spec that you have to have, if you're a spec conscious person, but that one isn't a stick, then you go, okay, well, maybe I'll swap that. And of course, nobody wants to make a bad financial decision when buying a car. So you go, you know, am I going to lose my shirt or is this going to be worth it? And I pulled one example, very, very recent sale that I think highlights how worth it it is. This is a 98 Ferrari F355 GTS 6-speed conversion. This car is an outlier because it is blue Tour de France with Bordeaux leather and the incredibly rare factory carbon Kevlar racing seat. So it is a spec to die for. It is unreal.
This has got to be the only one.
Probably.
And like, this is a perfect scenario, obviously, you know, big dollars and everything, but like the spec only came in this color, then just swap a stick in. This is amazing.
Right. So this car sold for $168,000. And the auction, there were some allegations in the auction that may have seen previous damage, including underside frame repair. So there was some questions, but it brought the moon anyway, which is more than I've seen recent factory stick shift 355 sell for. There was a yellow one with seemingly no questions other than needing a major service, which is like 10 grand. And that sold for like 133 last week. So, yeah. So if you're going to do it to a spec that's amazing, that's when you do it. And I was able to, thanks to Epic VIN, pull up the previous sale pre-conversion because I wanted to compare this car as it sold as an F1, then somebody converted it, and then it sold as a stick. What's the ROI? So Epic VIN is a great site. It's not Carfax, but it has historic archived listings, including photos. And it's great if you're trying to research kind of the story history of a car. And if you want those reports, you can use our affiliate link, which is listed in the show notes in the video description. So this car was last for sale as an F1 in 2020. It was listed for 90K. Now, you might say that's not a relevant result because
before the
cars
stair step
have skyrocketed since then. Guess what cars haven't skyrocketed?
Oh, is it 355 really?
F1s?
Whoa,
okay. The line is flat. The stick cars have skyrocketed. The blue chip desirable cars have, but the F1s seem to be selling for the same money that they were back then.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. So in this particular instance, with this spec, you got your money back and then some by taking a great spec car and converting it to stick. And spec really rules the day in the market currently. People are paying bonkers money just for a different color because it might be rare, which is a whole nother discussion.
We're not being depressing, Doug. We're talking about fun things. Stick swaps.
Okay, stick swaps. Talk to us. I'll get back to Ferraris. Talk to us a little bit about the Mercedes one. Speaking of cars that didn't have sticks that should have come with them.
So that's what I really wanted to focus on is it worth it to swap a Mercedes AMG car from the mid 2000s? And I came across a car that I had kind of forgotten
about. Like an ML
6055? No, the AMGs.
That is an AMG.
I came across a car that I'd forgotten about from May of this year that was on Bring a Trailer, which was a 28,000-mile CLK63 AMG, CLK63 AMG Black Series. This sold for $138,000.
As an automatic?
No, this was after the stick swap.
But that's kind of what they go for as an automatic.
It kind of is. So I looked at some other comps from around that time, and it is based on mileage, and like I'm not digging too much into condition. It did go like 10 to 20K over a comparable automatic.
I remember that sale. I remember watching that one.
It is so pretty. And in the comments, I don't know how accurate this is because it wasn't a comment by the folks that did the swap. Somebody said it was about 15K. Alleged it was about 15K to do the work.
So they got their money back.
I think so.
I'm surprised it didn't go for more given how rare that is, but maybe the hype hasn't built yet for a stick swap AMG like it has for some of the other cars.
And I think that is, you know, we hate the next big thing frame of mind because we're not trying to make any money. But I think stick swapped AMGs, they don't have to be Black Series, but from the early, from the 2000s, from 2000 to 2010, those are going to be something that as people make the kits and do the engineering work and the like smart stuff to make them function as a stick, as they would have been stock if they were offered that way, that is what is going to be fantastic because you are getting an experience that is unlike anything that was available and you're getting rid of a slush box.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were never great transmissions, were they? They're always
they were
just kind
okay
of
for an automatic. Maybe the car was just so good, I didn't care. They were
but
okay.
Like now you could have it with a stick for like not crazy money.
And yeah, I like that.
And Smoking like Tire did a video on like a normal SL AMG that was stick swapped, and they said it was absolutely incredible. It just suits the car, and you can breathe new life into something that was typically just kind of a cruiser.
Hmm.
So yep. I'm all about that. It doesn't seem to be that bad. Some companies are starting to do it. I would consider one at one point, I think. I don't want to do the swap, but like I would buy one that's already been swapped.
Totally. I totally would. Maybe I just need to find a really cheap ratty CLK 63 Black Series.
Yeah,
I was
going to
make fun of you.
I'm struggling over here. I've had to deepen the sauce.
Back to the Ferraris. 360 Challenge Stradales. That is a hot thing right now. Everybody is so six-speed converting those, not swapping. And I shouldn't even say six-speed conversion. It's a three-pedal conversion because it is the exact same.
The F1 transmission
gearbox.
Just shifts the vertebrae.
Right. You're removing paddles and hydraulic pumps and arms and things like that and using your
how
own
can
arm.
You how can you drive a stick without arms, Doug?
Yes. Actuators. You're taking out actuators. Okay. November 19th, very recent result, an 11,000-mile Challenge Stradale 6-speed conversion, 3-pedal conversion, sold for $493,000 on Bring a Trailer. Now, that is not... It might actually be lower than a non-stick one, but it's very difficult to determine where these are lying right now because the 360 Challenge Stradale market seems to be going through puberty right now. Like,
is it?
6 months ago, they were $300,000, and now they're like $450,000 to $800,000. Like everybody's just throwing numbers out there, like throwing darts at a wall, and who knows where they end up. So it's very difficult to say whether or not the CS 6-speed manuals are worth it from an ROI perspective. However, I kind of missed the boat. I did try to buy a couple different ratty or previously damaged or rebuilt title Challenge Stradales to do a 6-speed conversion on, 3-pedal conversion last year around like $200,000. And like they all got sold out from under me or something, whatever it was. And so I feel like I missed the boat, but I wanted to do it because they're just amazing cars. Like that's one of the greatest driver cars ever made, minus the sequential manual F1 flappy paddle crap. So I think that's one of the best cars on the planet to do that to. So money be darned. I think you should do that. I think that's the way to go. An example, of how far the Stradale market has come in a short period of time. 1 year ago, this exact same car already converted bid to $282,000. So it went from $282,000 to $493,000 in 11 months. Yeah. Growth spurt. The 430s. People are pumping them. There's a few people who are pushing the market up. Speaking of people pushing the market up, Blue Chip Denver has sold a couple stick swaps. This is one I tried to buy. There's a Canna di Fucili, probably butchered that, 360 CS stick swap that I tried to buy a couple years ago.
Okay.
They offered me their silver one, but they said it would have to be like $400K, which at the time was an insane number, and I didn't pay it. Well, they just recently listed the silver one on their site for $725, and then it is listed as sold. Now, we don't know what it sold for, but that certainly creates a perception of huge value in the market. The Canna di Fucili one is now listed at, I pulled the listing down, I think it's $845,000, which is insane. It's a great color, but talk about trying to drive the market up. $845,000. That is almost $1 million for Ferrari 360.
Where it's just like, it can't compute.
And no bearing in reality of the one that just sold for $493,000, but
There's got to be something, because people are using, I'm guilty of this, sites like classic.com that will show the like last asking price. You have no idea what it sold for. And if you're trying to look at the market, you're like, wow, they were asking that much. That doesn't mean it sold for that.
Exactly. They might have just brokered it privately and then put it up for $725,000. Not accusing anyone of shenanigans. I'm just saying, like, this is the car business. Perception of reality sometimes becomes reality. All right, let's look at 430s. That seems to be a pretty good one to do. And again, thanks to Epic VIN, we have some pre-conversion sales and post-conversion sales. And mixed results here. So we've got an 07 430 with 10,000 miles sold on P-Car Market for $130,000 in 2023 as an F1. As a three-pedal manual, it sold in May of this year for $178,000. Pretty good return there, sort of, but a conversion also costs in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000. So got your money back and a little bit more for the hassle. Another one we found here was a red one. The last listed price was $135K with 27,000 miles. That was in 2022. And then it sold on Bring a Trailer with 36,000 miles, so more miles, as a three-pedal manual for $141,000. So in that scenario, it did not ROI.
Well, and is 36,000 miles high for a 430?
It is, but so is 26,000 miles.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a couple other factors there, but still, it was not a significant enough difference to warrant the conversion. I think the best overall car to do it to and the biggest ROI is the Aston Martin Vanquish.
Yes.
Aston Martin Works offers a, you know, quote-unquote factory manual conversion, and that transmission on that car, that automatic, was absolute garbage, both from a driving experience, unless you ask somebody that owns one, they'll say it's the greatest thing ever, but also from a maintenance perspective. If anyone ever offers me one, I go, can I see the receipts for service? Because I want to know if the transmission's been replaced, fixed, whatever. And often there has been work done. These sell as an automatic all day long for like 40 to 50 to 60 grand, 60 being like a final year S package, as a manual, and the conversion costs anywhere from $25,000 to $40,000. As a manual, they regularly sell in the six figures.
Yes.
An 05 in May of this year, an S sold for $108,500. Another one sold on Collecting Cars, it was a U.S. car. It sold for $90,000 plus import and all that stuff. And I was actually trying to buy that car. The original sale didn't happen. They relisted it. I was bidding on it, and then it just disappeared from the site. So there were some shenanigans with that car. But the original sale happened at $90K, which after you factor in tariffs and importing it over here is well into the six figures. Another one sold on SBX Cars earlier this year. And of course, I've lost this reference. Where did it go? $136,000. So it was a very low mileage one, 4,000 miles, but still some very, very solid results for the converted Vanquish manuals. I think that's the best car to do it to. It's an absolutely gorgeous car. Huge, huge improvement to the car in terms of just mechanical reliability, driving experience, but also resale value. So there's my vote for the best car to manual swap. Well, other than the 360 Challenger Dolly and the CLK 63 Black Series.
I would put the Vanquish and the Black Series in kind of the same bucket of incredible vehicles that you just could never have with the proper transmission. So like that's the thing to do it on. And I do think that once the AMG stick swaps become a little bit more common, it probably won't be as high as the Vanquish, but I think they'll definitely be worth it financially. Yep. And of course for the experience.
Yep. I think it's got some of these have to catch on a little bit, but I like the Aston Martin, at least with the DB9, they initially offered it only in automatic. And then they said, yeah, we'll make it with a stick. And the stick one was significantly better in any way. More horsepower to the rear wheels, faster 0 to 60, lighter, just better all around. What if, this is a new sub-segment, I don't even have a name for it, I wrote some jokes, it may or may not be that funny, but we talked about Tallow and Teslas a while back, which was a initiative by Steak and Shake to promote their new, we were healthy
because
make our stuff, fry our stuff in tallow, beef tallow instead of vegetable oil, which is actually makes a big difference. But anyway, they wanted Tesla owners to come out and share their appreciation or whatever. They get free fries or something like that.
And you got the alliteration. It's catchy. Marketing. Yeah.
So that got me thinking, in an effort, there's an ongoing effort to come up with new creative, alliterative names for cars and coffee. Lambos and latte, Koenigseggs and eggs. What if we came up with some names, but did wrong answers only?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what do you got?
Corvettes and croissants.
Ooh.
I mean, you won't catch a Corvette owner drinking French press coffee or eating something he can't pronounce when he could just have toast and bacon and eggs. But don't you dare tell a Corvette owner that Corvette and croissant are both French words. Them are fighting words. Lambos and Lesbos.
Oh.
You don't see many Vermont natives have a sticker on their Subaru saying, my other car is a Countach, right? Tea tree and trucks. You know there, Bob, if your truck's going to burn oils, might as well be essential oils.
What?
Instead of rolling coal, how about we diffuse lavender from our exhausts?
Ethan, how do we pull the plug?
Yodas and Yodas for people who love economy cars and Star Wars action figures.
I think I might. Ethan said, I don't know about this segment for those of you listening when he does have a mic.
No? Yes? Maybe?
Well, Ethan, we need a team meeting.
See what YouTube thinks about that one.
YouTube, what are your best culture clash? Two things that will never go together. Soul and Spine wants everyone to have a higher quality of life. They specialize in non-surgical options for those who have been told that they need injections or surgery. They offer state-of-the-art techniques that help over 90% of patients become pain-free in just weeks. Starting with thorough medical history and comprehensive examination, you'll work one-on-one with Dr. Hoover to meet all your treatment goals. Their mission is to unleash your body's own healing potential to avoid drugs and surgery. Visit SolonSpine.com to learn more, located in Solon, Ohio. Well, speaking of manual transmissions, apparently they might save lives. That's according to an article on Yahoo.com, and we'll get there in a second. Before that, we want to highlight somebody who is teaching teens to drive stick shift, not just teens, but teens and adults. He did not know how to drive stick when he first got his Miata, and in Learning Stick, he created what is now becoming a nationwide franchise sensation. According to The Drive, Ahmed Reza turned his Miata into a side hustle by teaching enthusiasts to drive stick. So he created the Manual Driving Academy, which is an in-person program that is teaching a new generation of drivers how to row their own all over the country. So he started doing it just in his locale in Houston, but then he expanded to other cities in Texas and then nationwide. As of 2025, that's this year, but as of when this article was published, the Academy offers lessons in 47 different metro areas. And it is basically just a virtual company where he contracts with local instructors to offer lessons. The problem is, if you want to do this as an instructor, you have to use your own car.
Ooh, I'm out. Nope.
I mean, he could provide you with commercial insurance coverage, though, so you don't have to worry about that.
You could buy like a Corolla or like a Civic or something.
Yeah, those are becoming increasingly hard to find. It is very difficult to find a cheap stick shift car.
Yes.
But anyway, he is increasing the number of stick shift enthusiasts and their proficiency across the country with his cool little company. There's three different packages you can get: basic, standard, and the works. If you get the works, apparently in 2 to 4 hours, you can learn advanced clutch control, hill starts, parallel parking, and rev matched downshifts, which, man, I want to meet that instructor that can teach somebody who can't drive stick to do rev match downshifts in less than 4 hours.
I know. That was something that took me a while to get used to. Like, I had to drive my car for probably a couple of months before I felt like I was even okay at it.
Well, he said, your student should walk away with a grasp of. So, you know.
Oh, grasp. Hit the gas pedal when you touch it. Make rev go up.
Right. Anyway, so if you have a cheap manual car and you want to make some extra side hustle money, apparently he says you can earn $50 to $60 per hour. I just think it's cool because it is one more way that the stick shift culture is staying alive. And maybe it'll catch on and manufacturers will respond and make some more true manual cars. And that is good because, back to the Yahoo article, a number of parents are now thinking that their teens learning to drive stick shift is the way to keep them from crashing. Distracted driving, we know, is a real problem for teens, but let's be honest, it's a real problem for everybody. Old drivers think they're better just because they're old, but they're not necessarily. And I've seen just as many adults, maybe more, on their phones distracted crossing over the center line than I have teens. But
it's always middle-aged people.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. They're like holding up their phone like this. It's so bad.
Yeah. But in this article, the parents who are teaching their kids to drive stick, they believe that it is a way to give them too many things to concentrate, or enough things to concentrate on, that they don't have time or the ability to be distracted by their phones. Also, in driving stick shift, anecdotally, it makes you a better driver. If you talk to like old school driver's ed people, they would say that if somebody came in with a stick shift, like, they always passed. They just knew that they knew how to drive, and they proved it, that they did know how to drive. Because when you learn stick, you have to like learn more concepts, and it's just like a more engaging experience with what you're doing.
Well, and you have to pay more attention to what the car is doing, what you are doing, the traffic around you, because you need to be able to preempt. Do I need to downshift? Do I need to upshift? What kind of maneuver? Like, you can't just like step on the brake pedal, you know. And there's stuff from folks I've been around that don't know how to drive stick. They honestly ask me, how do you pay attention to so many things? How do you know what gear to go into? How do you know this? And it's like, I just kind of learned. And every car is different too. The different shift points and like different, each car likes to be in a different rev range when you're just cruising. And it's like all of that stuff you need to learn and internalize.
Yep.
It's a lot. I don't have time to sit there on my phone when I'm driving ever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the parents is quoted as saying, there's something about that engagement that makes you a better, more attentive driver. The room for distraction stinks. Shrinks. Ah, what am I saying?
Doug's a little heavily toasted over here.
I was reading another word and I conflated them. Each year, more than 200 people are killed, according to this article, in crashes involving distracted teen drivers. I think that stat is fake. We've talked about this before. People don't admit to being distracted because they don't want the ticket or they don't want the responsibility. So I would say that number is probably 10x, because you can't know unless you open an investigation and, you know, subpoena their phone records and stuff, if they were actually on their phone. And it's proven that people absolutely lie about it. So I think that number is harmfully low because it's not painting the real picture of what the real danger is. Here's a scary stat. In a 2025 survey, 7 in 10 teens admitted to using or looking at their phones while driving for about 20% of their trip.
What? What could you possibly need to look at for that much time?
6, 7.
Oh, Doug.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Just. What?
Whatever that TikTok phenomenon is. It's a 6, 7 thing. I don't know. Here's the disappointing thing. There is limited evidence to show that driving a stick shift can help reduce distracted driving among teens. Although one study found a reduction in distracted driving among adolescent males with ADHD. I don't know what that has to do with stick shifts, but anyway, they quoted it. But the parent said, we don't need a study to prove that driving a stick have been good for their kids. Quote, I've noticed that Logan is actually hyper-focused when driving the stick shift. One parent said, his attention is fully on the driving. He simply doesn't have the mental bandwidth to be thinking about his phone or other distractions.
Is that kind of a dig? Bro can't handle.
No, he's saying when he's driving an automatic car, the kid says there's so many functions the car does for you that it's easy for his mind to wander more. And that is so telling. There's so many functions the car does for you. We are going down that dangerous path of the car does more and more and more for you, because regulators and manufacturers and parents are, in my opinion, wrongly saying, well, drivers suck, so we need to have the car fix that. We need to have the car do more things for you.
Which means the
wonderful book from Matthew Crocker.
Oh, there it is. We need like a ding every time we
Why we drive, he says the exact opposite. He says that the more you do, the more skilled you are at it, the happier you are, the better you function, and we don't need the car to do more things. We need people to do more things, because that is the root of the problem.
Well, and a lot of the things that we dislike about modern cars, their size, their complexity, their weight, a lot of it is in support of, some of it is for batteries, for hybridization or fully electric vehicles and all that stuff. But otherwise, there's a lot that is related to additional safety or additional convenience features that I find entirely unnecessary. I never want lane keep assist in a car. I'm paying attention when I'm driving. I don't need the car to buzz me if I get slightly too close on a corner to the like inside to the shoulder marker. I don't need it. We do all of this stuff and it means people don't have to participate. And you're driving a 3,000-pound vehicle. That could hurt someone.
Yeah. The problem is the stick shifts now aren't real stick shifts, because they have hill start assist and stall
assist and rev matching and stuff. It's fine.
Now, you know, the geezers would say, well, manual transmissions used to not have synchros. Y'all are just soft, you know. But so
got a double clutch.
Yeah. So we can all, you know.
The only hill start I need is my handbrake.
Yes, I've said that. I've said that. All right, brings us to the props and flops of the week.
And as always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy and sell cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and be sure to mention Switchcast for special pricing when available. Find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, What is the problem is later.
No, we're not giving it away.
What pick is the pick of the week from
2007 Porsche Cayman S, 6-speed manual. Very few nannies or anything that that car does for you. No lane keep assist, no hill start assist, none of the assists. 13,000 miles, Arctic Silver, and factory sport seats. Very nice spec, low mileage, just a really, really fresh car. The car looks like it has the low miles that it does.
That is crazy low miles.
Uh-huh. Our flop of the week is a doozy. This article was originally on WXYZ.com. The title of the article is Family's Only Car Full of Christmas Presents for Children Stolen and in Detroit. Now, this happened when they were out at a Jonas Brothers concert, and their car, they had gone Christmas shopping before the concert. It was all loaded up with Christmas presents. And their purse and their wallet were in there. Things that my wife tells me not to leave in my car.
I also wouldn't go Christmas shopping before going to a concert in a city, parking a car in a But either way, this sounds sad. That's terrible.
Right, right. The awkward part of this all, and there was an interview with this couple, and it was pretty sad. Like, the guy is crying. He's going through cancer treatments. Like, they're just going through a lot of difficult things.
For sure.
The article is no longer on the website, and I'm not sure which is the flop in all of these flops, but yeah, the article is no longer there. We had to try to find the video because it came out that the car wasn't stolen. It was repossessed.
Oh.
Ooh. Dave Ooh. Ramsey has entered the chat with his controversial opinions. What are you doing? Going to a concert when you don't have money to pay your car note. Yeah.
Yikes.
He'd say you shouldn't be buying Christmas presents for your kids if you don't pay your... I mean, honestly, you shouldn't. You should be paying for necessities. The best Christmas gift you can give your kid is security, a roof over their head, not presents. We don't need more stuff. But anyway, oh boy, yeah, lots of step in it in that news story. There's probably a GoFundMe out there for this couple to get their car back from the thieves, those evil companies who took back the car that, whoops, whoops, egg on faces there. Let's see, our prop of the week. According to SkodaStoryboard.com, a European rally champion, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, Miko, he's a Polish driver and he likes hypermiling. And our friend Jay Roberts likes doing that in his Prius, but this guy did it with a diesel Skoda. And yeah,
the model of this car is the Superb,
the Skoda
Superb.
It has a scant 66 liter fuel tank and supposedly good aerodynamics. He did not heavily modify this car. It has a 2 liter TDI, 7-speed DSG automatic transmission. He just used low rolling resistance tires. And he noted that they were not brand new. He wore them in a little bit because that gives you better gas mileage. And he broke a record. And golly, where the heck is this record? You'd think I could do this better, but no.
Man, this car is like attractive.
Yes.
Why don't we get these?
For the longest amount of mileage driven on a single fuel tank, and that... In this long, long article, you'd think it was, right here, 2,831 kilometers.
Whoa.
On one tank of gas.
How is that even possible?
Hypermiling.
That's nuts.
Yeah. 2.61 liters of diesel per 100 kilometers.
Whoa, that's they make a superb station wagon. Uh-huh. Oh, that's hot.
This is great, though. His secret is smooth driving and foresight. Quote, look ahead, anticipate, ease off the accelerator in time, and try to brake as little as possible. Accelerate gently and gradually.
honestly, that is stuff that driving a stick shift in normal traffic kind of teaches you to do, because you have to work less.
Right.
I always preempt, like, when do I need to slow down? What do I need to do? And I just try to do everything smoothly.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm a big fan of diesel. I think it's a little bit crazy that America just poo-poos it and is full all in EVs. But man, think of what we could do. Like, what if that car was a diesel hybrid?
You could go across the, well.
Well, maybe over 100 miles a gallon, easily.
That's insane.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, I thought that was cool. I'm not a hypermiler myself, but I think these types of driving feats are cool nonetheless. And I love it when people prove that internal combustion engines can be and are very, very efficient.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.